Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker.
It starts with the setup.
You owe me 15 grand, pal.
Then you bait the hook.
Your boss is quite a card player, Mr. Kelly. How does he do it?
You play him on the wire.
The wire's been out of date for 10 years.
That's why he won't know it.
Now he's ready for the sting.
That's the trailer from the movie The Sting, where Robert Redford and Paul Newman play iconic con men. The setup, the bait, the sting, they're all still main elements of a successful con. The question remains, though, how do con artists get away with it? And the further question, why do we, yes, we, believe them? That's the subject of Maria Konnikova's new book, The Confidence Game, Why We Fall For It Every Time. Konnikova is a contributing writer for The New Yorker. She's also author of the popular book Mastermind, How to Think Like Sherlock Holmes. She grew up in the greater Boston area, but she joins us now from the Argo Studios in New York. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you so much for having me.
And listeners, we want to hear from you as well. As Maria Konnikova writes, at some point, everyone will be deceived. Everyone will fall for it. And the real question is why? So we're asking you, why do you think people fall for con artists? Have you ever been conned, or have you ever conned someone else? You can call us with your comments at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and on Twitter at Radio Boston. Maria, I want to start with another movie scene here. This one is from the movie House of Games, because you wrote that it was watching this movie that gave you the idea to write a book about con artists. Let's listen to this clip where the character Mike explains his profession.
I gave you my trust.
Of course you gave me your trust. That's what I do for a living. What are you going to do, go to the cops?
I may.
And tell them what? What are you going to tell them, stud? That the author of the best-selling Driven, A Guide to Compulsive Behavior, gave her fortune away to some con man? You see my point? Well, we've had fun. You must say that.
Maria Konnikova, what was it about this story that made you not only want to learn more about con artists, but write an entire book about it?
Well, first of all, I think it was the identity of the victim, the Mark, who was a very successful psychologist, a psychology PhD. She saw patients. She was a clinician. She'd written a best-selling book, as we hear in this clip. And if anyone should be a good judge of human nature, it's this woman. And she is not someone you would think of as a victim. And throughout the whole film, she actually knows she's dealing with grifters. She knows that they're con men. She knows that they trick people. She just doesn't think that they're tricking her. She thinks that she is in on the secret. And so I thought, wow, first of all, how often does this happen in real life? Because if she can fall for it, I certainly can. Is that actually a possibility? And if so, you know, how does that work? How can you be so aware of human nature and yet not realize that you're the center of this elaborate deception? And these questions just wouldn't go away. And I realized that no one else had explored them, so that's what I wanted to do.
So tell me, sort of broadly here, if you will, first off, you know, how is it that, you know, very smart, successful people seem to keep falling for scams, for con artists?
Honestly, I think it's basic human nature. I think that there's absolutely nothing that can protect you against it, not intelligence, not skepticism, not even awareness of how con artists operate. And I think there are two reasons for that. One is that as humans, our basic instinct is to trust others, not to distrust them. We're wired to trust each other. And trust is actually incredibly beneficial. There have been a number of studies that show that trusting others is actually the more advantageous strategy. So societies with higher levels of trust end up doing better economically. They end up doing better socially, having better institutions. Whereas the opposite, societies where levels of trust are low, don't really develop and end up stagnant. And that makes a lot of sense, because to build institutions, we do need to trust one another. We need to kind of create things together. And it works on an individual level, too. You find that people who are more trusting also tend to be more intelligent, happier, healthier. And once again, we know that social networks are incredibly protective, and friendships, that's one of the things that kind of sees you into old age. And so if trust is good for us most of the time, then, you know, those few times when someone's out to get us, we are more likely to be deceived. And it's not actually a bad thing. It's not bad enough for us to evolve ways to detect deception.
But I also wonder how much human greed plays into this, because a lot of times people are conned because they want to believe that they can somehow get more of something or get it easier or cheaper. I mean, isn't that part of what's happening as well when someone is conned?
You know, I actually don't think it is. Sometimes, sure, but I don't think that greed has that much to do with it. Let me give you an illustration of one of the most common cons of the modern age, which is the sweetheart scam. Now, imagine that a single woman goes online, signs up for a dating network, a network which she's going to pay for because she wants a very well-vetted individual. She really wants to find someone. She's been looking for a long time. Meets a man. He's really nice. They develop a connection. She thinks she's found the one, her soulmate. They spend hours on the phone over months of time, you know, and then things start going wrong. So she starts giving him money for surgery, money for a visa, money for plane tickets to come visit her. It always keeps falling through. And she, you know, she keeps believing in him. And all of a sudden she realizes she has no money left. And that person never really existed. It was all a scam. Is that woman greedy? Does she actually want, you know, does she think it's an easy way out? I would say absolutely not. She wants love. She wants affection. She wants something bigger in her life. And it's an urge that I think all of us can understand. And this con artist is taking advantage of that. And in fact, she's giving him money, not expecting any money in return. All she wants is that human connection.
I'm thinking more in terms of the sort of well-known con artists, like a Bernie Madoff, who is obviously well-known here in Massachusetts, comes to mind, and someone who's able to play into that and that weakness on the part of people. And maybe that's the secret of the con artist, right? Is that their psychology that's at play here, as they find out whether it might be love or it might be trust or it might be maybe greed that is someone's weakness that might allow them to take advantage of that person?
Absolutely. The first step of a con is the put up, where the con artist really psychologically profiles the mark and figures out, you know, what are the mark's strengths and weaknesses, hopes, dreams. What are the things that this person is made of? What makes her tick? And the put-up is the most essential part of the con, because if you do it well, you can really sell anyone anything because you know exactly how to appeal to them. And that's an absolutely crucial step, because you can't appeal to every single person in the same way. We are all potential marks. All of us could fall for a con, but we won't all fall for the same con or in the same way. And con artists know this, so they always pick the mark that's perfect for the precise type of scam that they want to pull. So I think you're absolutely right that that is something that they all have to do well and that they all do well. I'm sure that Bernie Madoff identified very different weaknesses than someone who goes on a dating site does.
I want to remind our listeners that we do want to hear from you as well in this conversation. We are talking with Maria Konnikova, who's author of The Confidence Game, Why We Fall For It Every Time. And we're asking you, can someone be immune to a con artist? Or is the con really an artist? What would you do to prevent yourself from being scammed? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and on Twitter at Radio Boston. I want to go to the phones right now. Ethan is calling from Lexington. Ethan, you're on the air. Why do people fall for con artists?
Well, I would like to just bring up why I've always fallen for the con artist.
Always, Ethan. Simply, always.
Every single time. I think it's simply because they know precisely how to act like real people, and I've been brought up knowing an archetype of what a con artist is, and by doing that, I identify every single weakness of a con artist, and by doing that, the con artists know exactly what to avoid. So basically, because we look so hard, I think they are able to get really good at it.
Okay, so basically you have become so sophisticated in trying to figure out what you think a con man should appear to be that the con man has out-sophisticated you and actually can beat you at that, so you'll fall for it.
Well, I wouldn't call my way of thinking very sophisticated. I think it's just how con men are portrayed in the media. I mean, they have to have weaknesses so the viewer can identify them as the archetypal con man.
Okay. Well, let's ask Maria Konnikova about that. Maria, your thoughts about what Ethan is saying here in terms of having this picture in your head of what a con man is and how the con man might exploit that.
Well, I think that the media does a huge disservice to all of us by its incorrect portrayal of both con artists and victims, because we do have this kind of almost a film noir version in our heads of what a con artist is. What we don't realize is that con artists are, you know, they're your next door neighbor. They don't have any tells. And that's why they're so successful. They're just charismatic, nice people. You don't see them coming. If you see them coming, they're not very good at what they do. The true con artists, oftentimes you won't even realize that you've been conned. You just think you had a bad interaction or bad luck or something just went wrong. But you never suspect that this was a con artist who was out to get you. And likewise, I think a lot of people become victims because we have this picture in our head of what a victim is, that a victim, you know, isn't well-educated, is pretty gullible, is a sap. I mean, we even adopt the language of the con artist. We say, oh, sap, sucker. We don't say, you know, this is a victim.
Mm-hmm. So essentially, though, you were saying that many people who are conned have different reasons for being conned or different weaknesses on which a con artist can prey. But it sounds as if you're saying that all con artists have more or less similar qualities.
I think that there's a lot of truth to that. I think that, yes, there is no archetype of the con artist, but there are certain things that a lot of them share. I read about something called the dark triad of traits, which is psychopathy, which is a lack of empathy, or kind of you don't experience emotions the same way as other people do. That's what allows you often to take advantage of other people without really caring that you're taking advantage of them. Then there's narcissism, which is not just an overblown ego, which I think is what most people associate with narcissism, but also a sense of entitlement that I deserve this, and so I'm just going to take it. So there are con artists in my book who, for instance, they give themselves PhDs or they give themselves law degrees, and they do this because they think, well, I'm smarter than a PhD, so why don't I just take it because I deserve it? I don't need to work for it. And then the third part of it is Machiavellianism, which is this ability to persuade people, much like Machiavelli's ideal prince. So you use the tools of manipulation and persuasion to get them to do things, and they don't even realize, it's so subtle that they don't realize that you're the one who's getting them to do it. They think that it's out of their own volition. And I think a lot of con artists have some of that dark triad of traits.
And, you know, I think we also, you mentioned the media and sort of portraying maybe a uniform version of what a con man should be or should look like or things like that. But I also think, in defense of the media here, kind of have to do it, the media also bring awareness to this and might make people more aware that when someone is, you know, saying something that is often appears to be too good to be true, it usually is. And it might make people more aware. And in this day and age, I think many people might say, I know more now. I understand what's going on. I will not be played because I do see so much in the media, and also because I have this little thing now called technology. So if Mr. Soulmate approaches me and tells me how wonderful he is and how he knows that he's going to meet every possible need of mine, I'm going to Google him and find out what else he might be doing. Why isn't that protecting people?
Technology gives us a false sense of protection. We think that it gives us that extra sophistication that we can, you know, Google everything. And sure, theoretically, that's true. But on the other hand, con artists are much more sophisticated than we are at using those tools, and they have all of the same tools and more available to them. So we give them a lot of information every single moment that we go online, on social networks, you know, on Facebook, Twitter, all of these different things. We tell them our likes, our dislikes. We tell them where we like to go, who our friends like, what we like to eat, all of these things that they can then use in the put-up that we've been talking about to form a psychological portrait of us and to also figure out where we are in our lives to try to figure out if we're actually vulnerable to being scammed. And what ends up happening, you mentioned, you know, this thing of thinking that if it's too good to be true, it probably is. Mm. Well, yes, when the media says that, we can objectively understand that. And if it's happening to even our best friend or someone at work or our next door neighbor, we will be able to see that and say, hey, I think you're being conned. When it's happening to us, we never think it's too good to be true. We always think that we're getting precisely what we deserve. It doesn't seem too good to be true. It just seems good and like our honest just desserts. And so we don't question that. And if someone else questions it for us, we get really mad. So imagine that you did meet this soulmate on social media, and all of a sudden your best friend is telling you, hey, you know, watch out, slow down. Maybe this person isn't who you think he is. What are you going to do? Are you going to honestly say, oh, you know what, you're right, I think that this is a con artist? Or are you going to say, you just don't want me to be happy?
Maybe it's the conned sense of entitlement as much as the con artist sense of entitlement that's a factor as well. I just want to make sure that we get time in for another call or two. Sarah is calling from Woonsocket, Rhode Island. Sarah, you're on the air.
Thank you. I believe it's Sharon from Woonsocket.
Okay.
Yes, I got a phone call about a year ago from Microsoft saying that my computer was corrupted, and I was panic because I use my website and everything else, you know, for my business. So I went on and I allowed, this company showed me a website page and they said, let me walk you through this problem, we'll help you. And okay, and I walked into the computer and this company was actually literally crawling around on my computer, and I followed all the prompts and everything else, like, oh yes, this is just horrible, this is Microsoft. And it had an Indian accent, so most of the tech support I realized comes from India. And I totally believed them, and they said, well, we can fix this for a certain amount of money. And so a little warning flag went up, and I said, well, let me just check this particular thing out. I went online while they were doing this. I was able to still search, and I found out that this was a scam, which was infecting people's computers and extorting money. And once they were in, and something just went up just in time, and I said, you're a thief. Oh, no, 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 ma'am. No, 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 no. I was able to get out of it. But I must tell you, I was plagued with phone calls for months and months afterwards, and still am. So I don't even answer the phone anymore because I didn't realize how vulnerable I was that I allowed a complete stranger to get into my computer.
Well, Sharon, I appreciate the call. So there's a story of technology working both ways, someone trying to scam with the use of technology and someone being able to use technology to avoid a scam at the same time. Maria Konnikova, I'm wondering, though, if you can tell folks, you know, there could be scams ranging from computers to dating sites to Ponzi schemes, to all kinds of marketing schemes. But is there a sort of general set of guidelines or advice that you would give to folks? How can you tell? Can we tell? How can we tell, Maria? You've studied this. How can we tell if someone is trying to con us, and what should we do?
The million-dollar question. So first, I think we cannot tell if someone is a con artist, and there's no so-called Pinocchio's nose of lying. You know, you're not going to be able to tell if someone is deceiving you. What you can do is, yes, information helps. So there are studies that show that learning about different types of scams makes you less susceptible to that particular scam in the future. So, for instance, anyone listening today, probably if someone calls saying that they're from Microsoft and that there's something wrong with their computer, they're going to think twice before letting them on their computer because now they've heard that particular scam. So that's one thing, just being aware of the scams that are out there. I think another thing is learning to look at yourself as if you were a stranger, if that makes sense. So this goes back to what we were talking about with the too good to be true. Mm-hmm. You know, if this were happening to someone else, what would you tell them? If this were not you, would you say, oh, I'm so happy for you, you've gotten so lucky? Or would you say, hey, now, maybe this is a red flag, maybe something is a little bit off. Now, that's easier said than done, because nobody wants to ask questions when things are all rosy and going well. People just want to ask questions when things are going poorly. So I think that that particular piece of advice, while well-intentioned by me, might be difficult to follow in practice.
Right. But overall, try to be objective and try to be aware. Those are the two bits of advice we'd get from you as we close up our conversation here. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. And third, I think of all, be aware of your weaknesses. So do that same sort of self-assessment that con artists are inevitably going to do on you, so that you know yourself as well as they know you.
All right. Maria Konnikova's new book is The Confidence Game, Why We Fall For It Every Time. She grew up in the greater Boston area, but she joined us from a studio in New York. Maria, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.